Today is January 23, 2023. We have a quorum present. We're going to proceed with the confirmation hearing for the Commissioner of Human Rights, Rebecca Lucero. Please come on forward, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. When you are ready, you can start your presentation. Just announce your name for the record, please.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Latz, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Lucero, and I am deeply honored to appear before this committee today as you consider my confirmation of the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. Now, you have a copy of my resume in front of you, so I won't go into specific details about my work history, but you should see that this position brings together my extensive leadership expertise in civil rights, policy, and community building. You will see through my work history, including with the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, Habitat for Humanity, as a practicing attorney, and of course in this current role, that I have always deeply understood that to see a more just world requires us to address the long-standing inequities that are built into our systems. You will see through my work history that I understand that we cannot build a more just and joyful world without working together to address fair and equal access to safe, stable housing, providing jobs where people are able to work, without fear of sexual harassment or discrimination, ensuring there is quality health care where everyone is able to get the care they need from their doctors, and providing a strong education so that every kid has an equal chance of thriving. I hope you see that to me, all of these issues are deeply interconnected. So I think actually the best way of telling you about myself is by introducing you to some of the people who are here supporting me today, all of whom make me who I am. So in person, I am joined by many awesome people, including my familia. James is here. He would want everyone to know that he is five. I am his Tia Luce, and being in his life is by far my greatest honor. He is pure love and kindness and silliness, and I work hard every day because he deserves to live in a just and joyful world, and I want to be part of creating that for him. Virtually from New Mexico is my mom. My mom taught me the power of joy and wonder and awe, and I always carry that with me. My dad, he has an incredible work ethic that he instilled in me, while always stressing that to do good work requires a good team. My grandma, Virginia Chavez, she was born in the 1920s. She's 95 years old. I hope she is able to hear this. She taught me that life is very hard and you must keep moving forward, putting one foot in front of the other, no matter what life throws at you, and it is going to put you through the ringer. But she always reminds me that I can choose how to respond. I get so much of my resilience from my grandma. I am here today in part because of all of those who came before me, all my ancestors whose shoulders I stand on. That includes my grandma, Maria Emma Lucero. She was born in the cold mountains of New Mexico into incredible poverty and challenges too many to name. And through it all, she grew stronger, physically, emotionally, mentally. She was the strongest person you would have ever met. I get my strength and my determination from her. I am who I am because of the people around me. And if confirmed, I will continue to do this work, both with ferocious dedication and ferocious joy, in honor of and with the support of these and many more incredible people. Now, I want to, of course, make sure that I'm talking to you about the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. One advantage that I have sitting before you here today is that I have had the pleasure and honor of working as commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Human Rights for the last 4 years. So there's so many things that I want to share with you to show off the work, but we're going to have opportunities coming forward. So let me just share three specifics about the agency and how we work every day to carry out the requirements that are embedded within the Minnesota Human Rights Act. First, at a time when civil rights are being threatened, the agency has taken on big challenges to meet the moment. The Minnesota Human Rights Act says that people should be able to work, go to school, and live their lives free from sexual harassment and assault. This means that the department has reached countless agreements with schools and workplaces that require them to change the culture of sexual harassment, put in place strong policies, and actually enforce those policies. One such case we announced last week, and it's been a busy couple weeks, so I'm just gonna highlight it real quick. It was a case against a McDonald's franchisee. In that case, a 14-year-old was sexually assaulted by her supervisor repeatedly, and several managers and supervisors were aware of it and did nothing. And even if someone wanted to call and report a problem, they would have found a non-existent phone number to use. In that case, MDHR entered into a consent decree impacting more than a dozen McDonald's across the metro, requiring changes across the board to their policy, to their training, to their enforcement, to their culture. Unfortunately, this case is not an outlier. Sexual harassment and assault is pervasive across Minnesota, and it's on all of us to change that. We take that seriously at the agency. The Minnesota Human Rights Act also says that Minnesotans should be able to work, go to school, live their lives without being discriminated against because of their race. This means that immediately following the murder of George Floyd, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights again met this historic Minnesotan moment by launching a high-profile civil rights investigation into the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department. This effort aims to provide the sustained and coordinated changes that are necessary to improve public safety by working to eliminate race-based policing. Since 1993, the Minnesota Human Rights Act has said that gender identity discrimination is prohibited. This means that in a time when transgender, non-binary, and queer youth are being criminalized across the country, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights has worked on several gender identity discrimination cases. This includes a case where we entered into a court-enforceable agreement with CSL Plasma that requires the company to make changes to all of their Minnesota locations to ensure that someone cannot be turned away because of their gender identity. This consent decree occurred after we sued CSL Plasma for barring two Minnesotans from donating plasma because of their gender identity. The second thing you should know is that as commissioner, I have prioritized building and strengthening the department's reputation and relationships across the board. That includes with legislators, community organizations, human rights commissions, civil rights organizations, and employment attorneys. As a result, you have seen us build up and strengthen a formal mediation program to support transformational healing between parties. We now require investigators to learn trauma-informed investigations to make sure that when they conduct their neutral investigations, they're not adding any harm. And we have built up a process improvement team to transform our entire operations to make sure we are operating as effectively and as efficiently as possible while providing quality customer service, especially with the 3,000-plus state contractors we work with on workforce and equal pay certificates. And I think lastly, and the most important thing you should know about the agency, is that none of this would be possible without the phenomenal team of dedicated employees. They are talented, they are hardworking. I cannot stress enough how fortunate Minnesota is to have this devoted team. Now, this past July marks the 55th anniversary of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Signed into law with bipartisan support by then Republican Governor Harold Levander, the law powerfully states discrimination threatens the rights and privileges of the inhabitants of the state and menaces the institutions and foundations of democracy. These powerful words ring true today and represent the agency's fierce and urgent pursuit of ending discrimination and my commitment to continuing this work as commissioner so that James, so that Lucy, Ellie, Luna, Noe, Victoria, and all of the incredible kids who are following in our footsteps can live in a more just and joyful world. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I very much look forward to working with all of you in the weeks and years ahead. Of course, I stand for any questions.
Thank you. Do any committee members have questions? Just waiting for Chair Latz to get back and then we'll take our vote.
There being no questions, And we will take a vote. The clerk will call. Is there a roll call? Okay. Recognize Senator Claire Umu-Verbatim.
I move that the Committee on Judiciary recommend the appointment of Rebecca Lucero as the Commissioner of Human Rights be confirmed. And I request a roll call vote.
The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Latz?
Yes.
Senator Umu-Verbatim?
Yes.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Eichhorn?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Kroon?
Yes.
Senator Pappas? Senator Seeberger?
Yes.
Senator Westlin?
Yes.
No, that's fine. What's our total number then? Nine. All those having voted in favor of the confirmation, the motion prevails. So, congratulations, Commissioner. This will now go to the Senate floor for final action.
Thank you, Chair Latz. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, we're going to take a little bit out of order here because the Attorney General has to go on to some other meetings today. So we're going to take up Senate File 73 with Senator Murphy, who is present with us. Senator Murphy, welcome to the committee. Senator Murphy, your chief author of the bill. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Erin Murphy, and I am here today to talk with you about Senate File 33. Senate File 33 is a very, very simple bill that will add to and restore funding to the Attorney General's office for the purpose of criminal prosecution. Mr. Chair and members, this is an important piece of legislation for Minnesotans. It is an important piece of legislation for Minnesotans in their support for, their pursuit of, and the demand for justice. And Mr. Chair, this is an important piece of legislation for our 87 county attorneys who have a longstanding relationship with the Office of the Attorney General when it comes to matters of criminal prosecution, and relying on the Office of the Attorney General to support our various county attorneys as they conduct the work that they have been elected to do. This proposal adds funding in this fiscal year of $269,000 to enhance what is already happening in the Attorney General's office, and then an appropriation in the next fiscal year of a little more than $4 million to build on that work and to support the critical work and the relationship between our county attorneys and our Office of the Attorney General. I'm a proud alum of the AGO. I know I'm not the only one in this room. I worked in that office when Skip Humphrey was our Attorney General. I learned the very, very critical nature and the important relationship between the Office of the Attorney General and our county attorneys across the state of Minnesota, as they do the work that they have been elected to do in pursuit of justice. I also think it is important to note that while the 2022 election is behind us, that the content of this discussion was a subject of great debate in the 2022 election. And this was something both the Republican candidate for Attorney General and the DFL candidate, now our Attorney General, A.G. Ellison, fought for, saying that it would be important to make sure that there is adequate funding in the Office of the Attorney General to support the work of pursuit of justice when it comes to criminal prosecution. That's what this bill is for. It's simple, it's clean, it's clear. I'd ask for your support, and I'm grateful to be joined today by General Ellison.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Welcome to the committee, Attorney General Keith Ellison. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate being here, and I want to have a special thanks to Senator Murphy and yourself, also Vice Chair Umar Verbaten and Senator Limmer. Thank you very much for your service and all members. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on SF-33, Senator Murphy's bill to appropriate funding for the Criminal Division of the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. I did some quick research, Mr. Chair, earlier today, and in the year 2000, when Skip Humphrey was the Attorney General, there were 12 full-time prosecutors. When I got to the office, there was one. I increased it to 3, and beyond that, we could not go because we didn't have the money for it. But this bill, if successful, will restore us to 10 full-time prosecutors plus about 3 or 4 more paralegals in total. Now we have 3, we get 7 plus 2 paralegals. This will put us in a position where we're not quite at pace with our team in 2000. Then we had 12, now we will have 10 if this passes. And yet our state was about 4.9 million people in the year 2000, and it's 5.7 million today. So the state's gotten bigger, the needs of the state have gotten bigger, crime hasn't gone down, and yet our complement is now just starting to catch up with where we were 20 years ago. Anyway, let me tell you about some of the cases that we've done. I have an exhaustive list in my hand, but I'll just tell you about some of the cases. Former Viking Barry Bennett and his wife Carol were pillars of the community in Long Prairie. Barry was raised in St. Paul, and after his NFL career, he had been a phys ed teacher in Long Prairie Gray Eagle School, High School, until his retirement. Carol was a tax preparer, and they were both leaders at the First Baptist Church. Carol and Barry had 6 children, and tragically, one of their sons murdered them. That's when the Todd County Attorney's Office turned to the Minnesota Attorney General's Office for help and asked us to prosecute the case. We, of course, agreed to do so. My office charged Dylan Bennett with 2 counts of first-degree premeditated murder. Dylan first pled not guilty, and before he did that, he absconded to Mexico. We got him to return, and so prosecutors in my office did all the work preparing for trial, but on the eve of trial, he accepted responsibility for what he did and pled guilty, and he's now serving a sentence of life in prison without parole. As you may know, original jurisdiction for all felony criminal prosecution in the state of Minnesota, except for Medicaid fraud cases, lies with the county attorneys. We have 87 county attorneys. They do a good job. They generally don't need our help, but in some of the more high-profile homicides, criminal sexual conduct, very serious cases, human trafficking, they do need our help. And Minnesota Statute 8.01 provides that we, the Attorney General, would help them. Minnesota Statute 8.01, passed by the legislature many years ago, states that if a county attorney asks the Attorney General for assistance, then the Attorney General may accept a case and prosecute that case for county attorneys. That's our statutory system. The Attorney General is the prosecutor of last resort in Minnesota, and even though our office is not, our trial team for prosecutors is not as big as it used to be, we still are very active. We prosecuted over 33 cases in the last 4 years. We've never lost one. But what we hear from our colleagues is that there's a lot more that we can do. I noted just a moment ago that we prosecuted a case in Todd County, a very tragic case. These greater Minnesota county attorneys do not lack for talent. They are excellent lawyers. They do a great job at keeping their community safe and holding offenders accountable. But what they lack is capacity to prosecute complex crimes like the murders of Barry and Carol Bennett, which involved scientific evidence, blood evidence, DNA, all kinds of complicated evidence that they just didn't have experience with, but we do have. This is where our criminal division for the Minnesota Attorney General's Office comes in. In just the last 3 years, and with only three full-time prosecutors, we have investigated, made charging decisions about, and prosecuted 33 cases of murder, manslaughter, criminal vehicular homicide, and criminal sexual conduct at the request of county attorneys. As you know, Mr. Chairman, the Attorney General has no legal authority to walk in and grab a case from a county attorney. We cannot do it. We would lack jurisdiction if we tried, and we have no desire to. We view our partnership with county attorneys as critically important, and they are the ones who ask us into the cases. And that is the way it should stay. But we want to be able to say yes when they do ask. SF 33 would allow the Attorney General's Office to start the work we've been trying to do since I took office in 2019, which is to rebuild the criminal division of the Attorney General's Office so that we can be more effective partners with county attorneys across the state. It's only when county attorneys request it or the governor makes an appointment that the criminal division can be called in to assist criminal prosecution. Let me be clear, these county attorney's offices they're strong lawyers, but here's just a little bit of by the numbers. 24 of Minnesota's 87 county attorneys have just two or fewer county attorneys. If a murder happens in that county, they just don't have the wherewithal to deal with it. And half of our county attorneys, half of our 87 county attorneys have three attorneys or fewer. So let me just say that I have ample remarks to make, but I think that Senator Murphy has made the case very clear. I won't belabor the committee any longer than necessary, but I'll be happy to answer any questions. At the end of the day, I'd just like the committee to know that if you have any questions about regarding reporting or anything like that, we already file an annual report under Minnesota Statutes 8.15. which the legislature deemed to be an appropriate piece of legislation many years ago. We do identify all the cases that we do in that document, and it is our hope that we can help bring justice to victims of very serious crimes so that they can have faith in our system and know that in their toughest moment, the Attorney General's Office, the state of Minnesota, is behind them and behind our counties and behind our families. And I'll yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you, Attorney General Ellison. Before you open it up for discussion, I'm just going to note that I did have passed out a copy of an op-ed piece from then Attorney General candidate Jim Schultz, the GOP candidate, and the fourth paragraph on the front page indicates that he would seek to do exactly what Attorney General Ellison is seeking to do here, which is to substantially or dramatically increase the number of criminal prosecutors in the Attorney General's office so that they have the capacity to do exactly what Attorney General Ellison is requesting that he have the capacity to do. So seems to me like this should be a consensus-oriented approach to give the office the staff that you need to do that. That said, let's open up the floor. Any discussion? Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Attorney General. One quick question. So at this time, my understanding from your testimony is that you are limited in the types of cases that you're able to help the county attorneys with first. And then the second question I had is, have you had to turn down taking on cases because of lack of capacity?
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yeah, we did. There was a case from southern Minnesota where there was an officer-involved shooting that we were not able to take. What we told them is that we would look at it, but we couldn't get to it for 6 months, and they said, that's just, can't do that. It's just too far out. Yeah, we are not limited by statute in the types of cases we can take, but we are limited by capacity, as you said. So at this point, you know, if it's not a homicide or a criminal sexual conduct one, we probably can't get to it.
Senator Howell.
Thank you, Chair Latz. What, Attorney General Ellison, if you gave one example, is that the only case? How many cases have you turned down due to staffing? I understand you have one. Is there a number in the past year or 2 years? Can you give me an example of exactly how many a year are turned down just because of staffing, not because of time delay, just because of staffing? And I got a follow-up after that. Thank you.
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, we don't keep documentation about how many cases we turn down. Usually these matters don't start with a letter. They start with a telephone call. And so the county attorneys who we meet with on the regular basis, they know what our capacity is. My chief deputy is here, and he might have some perspective closer to the ground than I do, but we don't keep stats on the number of cases that we turn down. But I will tell you this. We had 12 in the year 2000. County attorneys have written us numerous letters of support. I've been asking for this money for 4 years, the requests don't stop, but our capacity to take cases is, as I noted, limited.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Chair Latz. And I will tell you that having years of negotiations underneath my belt, the first thing I do is look for data. And if I don't have it, I collect it. So I'm surprised that if you've been asking for these dollars for years, that you don't have the data to back up your request. That's surprising to me that that hasn't been the case. To actually give us the numbers that back this up. You know, Chair, I'll just hold my next question for later.
Attorney General Ellison, response?
I don't think I have any response to that. I don't believe it was a question.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General, I'm kind of surprised by your answer. Usually, my experience has been whenever an attorney asks anything or inquires about anything, it's not limited to a phone call, it's put in writing. And so I'm always kind of wondering why you wouldn't have a record of requests that, due to funding or any other reason, you wouldn't have a cumulative total.
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I'm not sure you're asking me a question. If you are, could you make it more precise?
No, I don't need to ask you a question. I'm just reflecting kind of my reasoning and my experience of dealing with attorneys in the past. They usually put everything in writing and then there's a track record. Data is collected. So maybe it's not the practice in your office to seek that in writing. But nevertheless, I did have a question on the writing of the bill itself. I understand that this went to a previous committee and some of the language was amended out. And I just have to find it. The language that was omitted out was defining the role of what the money would be used for. Money would be used, quote unquote, aid in the enforcement of the criminal laws of the state, to respond to the unmet needs of counties and to provide necessary assistance with county prosecutions of serious offenses. That no longer is in the original bill. And yet there's kind of a curious reference in the bill before us on lines 111, it talks about language that says enhanced criminal enforcement. I don't know if that those words are to replace the words that were removed. But then it adds and related initiatives. Could you tell me what is that limited to? It seems like an awfully broad door that we're offering to you in your request.
Attorney General Ellison.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Minnesota Statute 8.01 does not require the counties to limit what kind of cases that they ask us to do. It says that the county attorneys may ask us to help us with help them with cases where they need that help, and it's been that's been in statute for literally decades. I can tell you that the work that we do is as I have mentioned to you, right? I have a list of cases that we've done since 2019, and first degree murder, second degree murder, first, second, criminal vehicular homicide, third degree criminal sexual conduct, cases of that nature. Now, when it comes to related matters, I'm sure you're aware that we do handle for the counties involuntary commitments for sexually dangerous predators. Those cases are inherent, those are civil cases. And so they're not criminal, but our criminal group does those cases. So that would be the kind of case that we would also be using the money for.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
By your answer, Attorney General, then your office would not get involved unless in these areas of related initiatives, you'd only get involved upon the request of a county attorney somewhere else in the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Attorney General Ellison.
That's the law, sir.
One other question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer.
Currently, your budget the funding of the budget is under the jurisdiction of the State Government Committee. Is there a reason why you're requesting this money through this committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Attorney General Ellison.
I was not involved in the selection of committees, but I will say this. This committee deals with matters of criminal justice, so I think it is appropriately here. I'm very pleased to be here in front of you who have built expertise around the criminal justice system, and so I think it is appropriately here, but it was not me who decided the path of the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator, I can answer that question, Senator Limmer. This did come from state government, and it will go to finance. I'm not sure whose pot ultimately this is going to come out of. In terms of where the money comes from, but I thought it appropriate for Judiciary and Public Safety Committee to hear the bill because of the impact on the criminal prosecution system in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, perhaps I was following just kind of an instinctive pattern that anything we consider is usually in our jurisdiction. As you have said, that hasn't been decided yet. Is that correct?
Well, not every bill fits clearly into whatever the lines are delineating jurisdiction. It seemed to me that we had jurisdiction on this bill for the reasons I just described.
Mr. Chairman, for many years, the Attorney General's office has had, in the past, times when the Attorney General's office has gotten involved in criminal matters. And yet, despite that, it hasn't been in our jurisdiction. And so I'm just trying to find out if we're going down a new path, expanded role by our committee or not. And that way we're going to have a clear path ahead.
Senator Limmer, the council guided me that this was a kind of a close call in terms of whether it fits squarely within our jurisdiction or not. So I erred in favor of hearing it, given the impact on the criminal justice system. That's not saying every state government bill that comes through the legislature that funds anything connected with criminal justice issues is going to come to this committee. But this one is a particularly focused one on criminal justice matters.
Mr. Chairman, in the last few years, it came abundantly clear that we shared our jurisdiction with some of the issues with our transportation committee. And up to just a few short years ago, it was never a real big issue. Senator Newman, that the then chair decided to make it more of a pronounced focus of his. And so we had to do a lot of discussion back and forth to try and define that new role. And he was a little bit more energetic in wanting to understand some of the issues. They would kind of cross over the line a little bit, drift over the line. And so I suppose I'm just to assume that that's kind of the exercise we're doing today.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Chair Latz. And to the author, Senator Murphy, I've got a question. In what is meant, you know, usually I look at this and it talks about enhanced criminal enforcement and related initiatives. Is there anything that would prevent, I mean, in the past, I know in state government we have had these discussions about where the Attorney General's office has put their efforts. There's nothing precluding them from taking in the environmental stuff that is not social issues, that are not criminal issues. They could spend this money literally on whatever prerogative and policy that they seem to be important at the time. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Howe, thank you for your question. And I have been listening patiently to the questions about this proposal. In state government finance, we did amend the language to make sure that it was very clear what it was that we were doing. And when Senator Latz and I spoke about this proposal, I was happy to come before this committee so that we could talk it through on our way through to the Finance Committee, which I hope will then pass the bill so we can take it up on the floor. The language is really clear, Senator Howe, and General Ellison has also been very clear about the restrictions in current law about the ways in which they can take up work on criminal prosecution. And so I think it would be inaccurate to say that this proposal before you would allow the Attorney General's office to spend this money in any way they choose, because we already understand in the law that there's a relationship between the County Attorney's Office and the Attorney General's office in terms of jurisdiction. And therefore, when we talk in this bill about criminal prosecution, we are being very clear that this funding is for that work in the Attorney General's office, and we already know the relationship between the County Attorney's Office and their jurisdiction and the Attorney General's Office and their support for those prosecutions that are delivered to the Attorney General's Office with their request for help. One last point, Mr. Chair. I think it is important that we're thinking about this funding and this legislation going forward. There has been some questioning about the past, but this is a proposal going forward. And this legislature is making a choice, a decision. We're considering this piece of legislation, and we need to consider what that means for our county attorney offices, all 87 of them across the state of Minnesota, and the work that they are charged with, they're elected to do in order to pursue justice for the people that have sent them there. In your packet, there should be a letter from the county's attorney. They support this proposal. They understand how important it is that they have a reliable office to turn to if a crime, a serious violent crime, happens in the county and they need support in pursuing justice. So the question before us is not about the past, but about the future and our support together as a legislature for those county attorney offices and Minnesotans across the state, all 87 counties. This is a statewide issue. That's what's before us, and that's why this is important and why I ask for a unanimous vote for this proposal.
I might also add that it's probably more important for the rural county attorneys than it is for the metro, who have a lot more resources and confront some of these issues on a more regular basis, so they have the in-house expertise. It's the smaller offices in greater Minnesota that have it less frequently, face these kind of cases less frequently, that turn more often to the Attorney General's office for their help. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Chair Latz. And from my understanding, from talking to both my sheriff and my courts, is that the big backlog that we currently face is due to the COVID and due to they don't have enough judges and enough time and enough law clerks to even handle the cases that are before them. So I haven't heard anything from my county attorney looking that they are backlogged because of their staff. What I'm hearing that it's the backlog because of county attorneys and county clerks, or the law clerks. So I don't know how this is going to help in that initiative, but I would prefer to see something that the language is actually clear on where this money goes if it isn't being used for that, and where all this can go. Because I like the original language much, much better than this language, because this looks like it's just an open door to spend money wherever he sees fit. Thank you.
Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments, maybe a couple of clarifying questions here, if we can sort of rein this back into what we're discussing. What I understood from Attorney General Ellison is it's not a question of backlogs. The county attorneys are asking for help actually charging cases. This has nothing to do with once they get to the court system. That is a completely different problem. We can certainly talk about funding for courts on a different date. But this is about actually having our county attorneys, and we have several pieces of information here from the County Attorneys Association and others, I assume bipartisan support, saying that they really support this initiative because they need additional help. We are talking about funding eventually to bring on a total of 10 lawyers, where there are currently, if I understood correctly, three. And in the year 2000, 23 years ago, the office had 12 attorneys. So they're still understaffed, and yet they will have the ability at that point to assist our, especially greater Minnesota county attorneys, bring cases, charge cases, bring them to conclusion. I guess what I find a little bit surprising here is the pushback on ensuring that our Attorney General's office has the capacity and the ability to provide help to prosecute criminal behavior and criminal activity. I guess I don't have a question in there other than the fact that I think we should support this bill. Again, I'm going to assume that the county attorneys that who support this run the gamut of partisan affiliation, and they are asking for help. And our Attorney General is here to ask for us to provide adequate funding so that their office can support prosecutors throughout our state and bring people to justice.
I can assure the committee that when the time comes, the Chief Justice will come before us and explain how they have a pandemic-related backlog, just the mass of cases that they're trying to move through the system, and we'll be seeking funding to adequately staff, including to keep the law clerks. So we'll have an opportunity to address the backlog, but I would agree with Senator Westland. This is not a backlog issue at all. It's just having the resources to address individual cases as they arise that the local county attorneys may not have the resources or the expertise to handle to their own satisfaction, so they would turn to the Attorney General for assistance. Senator Westland.
Mr. Chair, sometimes the train leaves the station without me, but it does come back. So I did think of my question. There was a question, I believe, posed, or a comment from Senator Howe about whether or not you would just be able to use these funds for anything. And I seem to recall, Attorney General, that you testified that you are required to file a report under statute, and that, can you explain again what that report is, and would that require you to provide some accounting for how the funds were used?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, absolutely. Minnesota Statute 8.15, passed by the legislature many years ago, requires the Attorney General's office to issue an annual report where we lay out all of our activities, not just criminal, civil, our agency representation, everything that we're doing. So there's ample reporting that it's taking place right now. And I mean, the reality is, Senator, is that this, it's our county attorneys who who've inspired me to make this request in the first place. This is the fourth time we've asked for this money. If I don't spend it on what I say I'm spending it on, I mean, I'm on record 4 years in a row for what we need this money for. And so there's no doubt that we're going to spend it on exactly what we say we are.
Any further discussion? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at these letters that were passed out just a few minutes ago, one of them being from the County Attorneys Association, which states that, among other things, a group of experienced prosecutors from the Attorney General's office to respond to a request for assistance is in the best interests of public safety. This is the County Attorneys Association, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if I can ask one question that may be a little bit difficult to answer, is how many counties does the County Attorneys Association cover? And this is, I would assume, their organization's opinion, which seems to be a pretty strong statement requesting this information.
Senator Carlson, we have the executive director of the County Attorneys Association with us, Robert Small, to answer the question. Mr. Small.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Senator Howe. I'm the signatory on that letter, and all 87 counties are members of our association. It's a nonpartisan association.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're Mr. Small, I would assume?
I am, thank you.
Thank you. We do have the major association of county attorneys that is behind this request. So it really answers the question of whether we have broad-based support for this. And I see I only have three letters here, but of course your letter, Mr. Small, largely represents all of those that are missing. But I think in the past I've had, the Attorney General has asked for this funding quite a few times, and I've been in the committee that has responded, or a lack of response to that. And we've had a sheaf of these. If I would probably bring them all in here, it could be a quarter of an inch thick stack of letters that we've had in the past. So I think it makes it very clear that we have broad-based support for this budgetary addition, and also, I don't know, but I would assume that this helps get cases resolved that otherwise may not be resolved. And if you have experienced attorneys in particular areas, that they get resolved faster, and sometimes the resolution might even be pleas. So there, it could help the courts to get these pleas taken care of as well. So I'm going to assume, Mr. Attorney General, if that's the answer, that maybe you would support and look forward to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I do affirm that answer. I think that the Senator is absolutely right.
Any further discussion? Senator Cruen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question is for the Attorney General. I believe your testimony was, in a sense, this work comes at the request of county attorneys. I guess my question then is, if the law is that you can't get involved without a request from the county attorney, is there a reason why that limiting language shouldn't be language in this bill? Or maybe that's better directed to the author.
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the Minnesota statute 8.01 says now and has said for literally decades that I cannot go out and take a case from a county attorney. I can't imagine any good reason why we would need to write it all over again if it's already there. We have an obligation to obey the law.
Senator Cruen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Section 801, in addition to the county attorneys, does not the governor also have authority to direct prosecution under that statute?
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the governor does have the right to appoint, and I would also add, Senator, that we can take cases on an original basis from Medicaid in the area of Medicaid fraud. That's through a federal group program, and that's per statute as well. So there are exceptions. This bill is to help us help our trial team to respond to the needs of county attorneys. And so, yeah, the statute certainly does say that.
Senator Crum.
This is just a comment. I also prefer the language as it was originally drafted. I understand that the statute says what it says, but if the purpose of this appropriation is to come to the assistance of the county attorneys to help them prosecute violent crime, I don't see any harm in why the appropriation language shouldn't state that. And in fact, given that I don't believe Section 801 is quite as narrow as simply limiting it to the county attorneys, it also would, I think, be substantive as well. So that's a comment, not a question. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments or discussion? Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Small.
I thought you would, Senator.
Good to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
You've been following this legislation, I'm assuming, and the language had been altered from the first committee, and we're discussing it now. Does your association have an opinion on the language one way or the other?
Mr. Small.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, we don't have any problem with the change in the language.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mr. Limmer. Small, does it have a different effect or meaning by one version or the other?
Mr. Small.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, not to our association, it doesn't.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, and in listening to this discussion, I think I probably started it, but I still have a concern of why we aren't staying with the original language. Just a few days ago, in the middle of last week, we had a discussion about the words, but not limited to, which certainly gives added opportunity for initiating the purpose of a bill, but without a definition. And although there might be a broad limitation of the AG's office regarding it, as the references of Chapter 8.01, was it, that I prefer getting as detailed a direction in legislation rather than broader undefined references. I don't know if we have the amendment prepared at this time or not, but I would like to have the committee consider the original language that was in the bill and strike the words that replaced it. I don't know if we tried to get the amendment created at this time. I don't know if it's prepared or not. Is that the A3 amendment? Copies are being made, Mr. Chairman, and it's referenced as the A3 amendment, and I'd like us to consider that. I don't know.
While we're waiting for the copies to be made, let's see if there's any further discussion right now. If there's not, we can lay the bill on the table, proceed with our next agenda item, and return once the A3 amendment is ready. Okay. Is there any further discussion right now? Senator Crewen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fully support assisting our county attorneys, especially in cases, helping them prosecute violent crime, especially smaller counties. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'd like to see those resources added. Has there been any thought, this question is for the Attorney General, within your office about reallocating existing resources within the office to hire these criminal lawyers versus this additional appropriation or some combination thereof?
Mr. Chairman.
Attorney General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the Office of the Attorney General's appropriation from the state has been pretty, in nominal terms, pretty much the same from the year 2000 up until 2019. If you calculate inflation on a 2% basis, our budget has been cut dramatically. So I think your question is a fair one. Can't we just reshuffle the deck? The bottom line is we have a lot of the answers, not really, because we have statutory obligations on a number of levels. For example, Minnesota Statute 8.06, I believe, requires us to represent every board, commission, and state agency. That takes bodies to do that. We're required to represent ratepayers under the Residential Utilities Act. That requires people. So, you know, the only thing between your average ratepayer and a higher bill is the AG's office. So we have to have people staffing that. We have certain obligations under certain charities laws, under Minnesota Statute 8.31, we have a duty and obligation and legal expectation that we will represent the people of the state of Minnesota when they are victims of fraud, price discrimination, and other unfairness in law. So a lot of the staffing requirements that we have are driven by legislative requirements. So if I were to do that, I would be I'd be violating the law, and I'm sure somebody would complain about that. So we're sort of stuck with what we have. So Minnesota Statute 8.01 says we may help. When I wonder, how did we go from 12 in 2000 down all the way to 1 when I got here? And I think it's because the AG was trying to deal with budgetary pressures, and Minnesota Statute 8.01 does not prescribe how much we help counties. It says we should help them, but doesn't require that, you know, we have a lot more flexibility. That's my best guess, because I do know that the prior AGs cared about the issue, but if your budget's falling and you have to give up something, you know, this is an area where they could get year to year. But the problem has been crime victims, people being murdered, people being shot, people being raped, people being hurt, and counties being too small to meet the needs of those crime victims. And so this really is an urgent thing. I think Senator Latz said earlier, this is actually a bipartisan thing. This is something we can do on both sides of the aisle, is to meet the needs of crime victims. But we don't have anybody to spare, Senator. And if we did, I certainly would deploy them to this area because I recognize the urgent need.
Members, the A3 amendment has been distributed to your desks. Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chair, it would be great to get a copy of the amendment, please.
On its way.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Limmer, to the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In our haste of writing the amendment, we omitted the dollar amount for the fiscal year 2023, which we wanted to include, but defined the purpose as defined in the balance of this amendment. I don't know if Mr. Turner could help us out with a quick clarifying amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think we'd accomplish what Senator Limmer wants by inserting on line 1.4 before $2,021,000, $269,000 in fiscal year 23, comma. And then you would delete the and, or no, the comma. No, that's it. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I would add that to this amendment.
Now, that language will be incorporated into the amendment. Senator Limmer, do you intend to move your amendment?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you intend to move your amendment?
Yes, I so move the amended amendment, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion on the A3 amendment? Senator Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am taking a deep breath, and I'm grateful to be here and for this discussion. Grateful to hear Senator Limmer, the the insertion again of the funding for fiscal year 23. That shows me that we are on the right track in terms of bipartisan support for this idea. I did appreciate and understand that we would have a discussion in this committee, but I am puzzled. I'm puzzled by the skepticism on the part of some about the intention of the use of these funds as described in the bill before us. The language in the bill before you is very clear, as is the law and the practice, and the relationship between the Attorney General's office and our county attorneys. As I mentioned earlier, over the course of the summer and fall, there was a vigorous debate about this issue on the campaign trail between now General Ellison and candidate Jim Schultz. Jim Schultz was making the case for increased funding for this criminal division of the Attorney General's office. A strong and clear case. I have the op-ed language right before me. I really don't want to go down this partisan path. I would like us to continue down the path of support for this because we support our county attorney's office. With that, the language in the bill that is before you is clear. It is well defined. It expresses the purpose of this legislation and the support for enhanced criminal prosecution by the Attorney General's office under current law. And therefore, I would ask you to vote no, respectfully, on the Limmer Amendment. Thank you.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Sir Murphy, I appreciate your comments and concerns. I'm not really sure what the candidate for Attorney General, Jim Schultz, had in mind. We don't have a specific legislative bill before us. We don't know if he would agree with the exact wording of the previous committee. He was more than likely asked that question, a quick campaign stop, and probably didn't have the ability to develop a full statement on it. Of course, anybody would say, who would say, no, I don't want to prosecute more crime as an attorney general? So, but I may want to focus on the county attorney's letter because that seems to be so central to this. When they talk about justifying this added money, quote unquote, to gradually, so I'm assuming there might be even more money coming in form of requests, to build the Attorney General's office's capacity to aid our greater Minnesota County attorneys enforce the law in their jurisdiction. Now that in turn, I believe, is in concert and in agreement with Chapter 8.01. Again, going back to the broader statement of related initiatives, I don't like to see broad initiatives written in this form in any type of law we write. This is kind of standard procedure that we do in this committee. We focus on words like that, similar to the ones last week, quote unquote, but not limited to, which is an open door for justification of going in all sorts of directions. We should be tight. We should be refined in this committee when we pass things out. And this amendment, I don't believe, does damage to this bill. And in fact, it defines it well. Unless there might be other things that are in mind that nobody's talking about. So I'm putting it out there for us to consider and nail down the very purpose of this and not to go any broader. Committees or the amendments before us, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on the amendments? Senator Westland.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, my understanding is this bill went through your committee. Is that correct?
Senator Westland, yes.
Senator Westland.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, I assume that there was a robust discussion before it was amended in the form that was brought to us today. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair and members, I offered an author's amendment We added it and had a robust discussion in the committee. Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
And Senator Murphy, looking at the original language of the bill, it says that the funding could be used for needed legal services to prosecute violent crimes and crimes that financially harm consumers and businesses. And my reading of that is limiting language, that that defines specifically the types of services the Attorney General could provide in support of our county attorneys. Do I have that right?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westland, I believe the language in the bill before you gives the Attorney General's office the funding necessary for enhanced criminal prosecution and to support our county attorneys' efforts to pursue justice. That is our goal, in keeping with the work between our county attorneys and the Attorney General's office. And I believe the language accomplishes that and does it well. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
To Attorney General Ellison, by using language that says enhanced criminal enforcement and related initiatives, does that give you a broader scope in terms of the assistance that you can provide the county attorneys versus the original language of the bill?
Attorney
Mr. General Ellison.
Yes, it does. And I would just advise members that a county asked us to handle an environmental crime. It was a crime, violating the criminal statutes of our state. They didn't have the hydrologists and the scientific expertise that they needed to do those cases, and we have a whole environmental group that does nothing but environmental stuff. And so, course violent crime, course financial exploitation. But there are more crimes than just that. But I will say that we are talking about criminal prosecution here. And we're also talking about this in the civil aspect, sexually dangerous predators as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Westland.
My final statement really is that I respect the work that Senator Murphy's committee did. They had a robust discussion. They brought forward a bill to us today in its current form. It meets the requirements of the County Attorneys Association. It provides broad enough language to allow the Attorney General's office to prosecute and assist our county attorneys in any criminal prosecution that they may need help with, and I would urge members of this committee to vote no.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I ask for a roll call.
There'll be a roll call. Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Chair Latz?
No.
Senator Umover-Bayton?
No.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Eichhorn?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Kroon?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
No.
Senator Seeberger?
No.
Senator Westland?
No.
There being four ayes and six noes, the amendment is not adopted. On the original bill, Senate file number 33, is there any further discussion? There's a request for a roll call. Yeah, Senator Limmer requested a roll call. There'll be a roll call. The clerk will take the roll. Oh, wait, we need a motion. We need a formal motion here. Senator
Mr.
Westland.
Chair, I move the committee adopt the Senate file 33, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance, and I also request a roll call.
Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Latz?
Yes.
Senator Umover-Bayton?
Yes.
Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Eichhorn?
No.
Senator Howe? Senator Kroon?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Seeberger?
Yes.
Senator Westland?
Yes.
There being six ayes and four nays, the motion does prevail. Senate File 33 is recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that was the vote tally.
I'm sorry?
I don't believe that was the vote tally.
Well, give me a moment. I stand corrected. Senator Cruen, I withdraw the previous statement, there being seven in favor and three opposed. Senate File 33 is recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Thank you, Senator Cruen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Murphy and Attorney General Ellison. All right, we're going to move on to the last item on the agenda, the confirmation of Commissioner Schnell, Minnesota Department of Corrections. Commissioner Schnell, welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name and proceed.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair Latz and members of the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. For the record, my name is Paul Schnell, and I was appointed by Governor Walz to serve as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Corrections. While it is my understanding that the committee has been provided with my resume, I'm grateful for the opportunity to make a brief statement of introduction as you consider my confirmation. I have been honored to serve as the commissioner of the Department of Corrections for the last 4 years, but it was more than 30 years experience in the broad field of public safety that prepared me to serve as commissioner. The groundwork for me serving in this role began when I first moved to Minnesota from a small town in northeastern Wisconsin to attend college at the University of St. Thomas. As a social work major, it was my college internship that first exposed me to corrections work. That internship, just miles from here, at what was then the Wilder Foundation's Bremer House, right across from the old Schmidt Brewery. That year-long experience gave me the opportunity to work with young men who faced the likelihood of commitment to prison. Not only did I learn a great deal from the internship experience itself, I also learned a great deal from the men in the Bremer House program, most my same age, about the differences, but I also learned incredibly about the differences of the worlds we came from. By way of personal background, I have been married for 35 years. I'm a dad to four kids, two adopted, two biological. My adult children now range in age from 24 to 31. One of my adoptive children, now age 31, is wheelchair-bound and ventilator-dependent. And it is from him that I came to learn and understand the real potential of people, a lesson relevant to my current role. My wife and I got him as a three-year-old foster child, and despite being told he would not likely live to see his fifth birthday, he overcame challenge after challenge. His ability to adapt and change taught me that good can come from seemingly insurmountable challenges. And anytime I felt sorry for myself, being around my son, who has the most positive attitude imaginable, even though a machine keeps him alive, reminds me just how good I and many around us have it. I am the first person in my family to attend and graduate from college. And though I didn't always value it at the time, I had the good fortune of being able to do my own homework at the table with my then young kids as I completed my master's degree in organizational leadership at St. Catherine University. As for professional experience, I worked as a case manager with men leaving prison at Volunteers of America Halfway House in Minneapolis. I managed an electronic home monitoring program for the nonprofit Reentry Services when monitoring technology first emerged in the field of corrections. I've worked as a deputy sheriff in Carver County, a police officer and a police sergeant in the city of St. Paul, and as police chief for the cities of Hastings, Maplewood, and Invergrove Heights. Because of the diversity of my professional background and social work training, I have come to know firsthand we cannot arrest our way to safer communities. Yes, we absolutely must and should hold those who violate our laws to full account. And as a police officer, I have been involved in the arrest or investigation of people that today are serving sentences in our prisons. But I know that the imposition of a sentence is not where it ends. As I mentioned in previous testimony before this committee, 95% of people incarcerated across our state, 500 to 600 leaving our prisons each month, will return to neighborhoods, towns, and cities across Minnesota, which is why the work of the more than 4,200 staff at the Department of Corrections matters so much. More than 3 years ago, the Department of Corrections established a mission to transform lives for a safer Minnesota. While the COVID-19 pandemic created many challenges for our department and the staff, the agency maintained a steadfast commitment to that mission. As a department, managing COVID taught us much about mobilizing our focus and resources on critical goals. Now we are doubling down on our focus. That focus is the delivery of evidence-based programs and services targeted to ensure that those who leave our prisons every month become productive and engaged members of their communities and better parents to their children. Not only should the work of the Department of Corrections and Corrections and Partners advance the public safety of Minnesota, but now, with workforce needs as they are, we need for the people we serve to become full contributors to Minnesota's economic vitality, public safety, and the quality of life in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members, I look forward to working with you, our state's policymakers, to deliver on the Department of Corrections' mission in service to Minnesota's public safety. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to make this opening statement. I ask for your support of my confirmation, and I will stand for any questions you or committee members may have.
Thank you, Commissioner Schnell. Is there anyone else that you seek to have make a presentation on your behalf at this time?
No, sir.
Thank you. Any members of the committee have any questions or discussion? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had the pleasure of working with Commissioner Schell. Commissioner Schnell many times over the last number of years, as well as his staff, and I'm very pleased that he is before us and will strongly support adoption and approval of him as Commissioner of Corrections.
Any further discussion or comments? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not exactly sure when Mr. Schnell, Officer Schnell, Chief Schnell came onto my radar, but it was some time before he took the position in Maplewood as Director of Public Safety and then Chief of Police. But he's always represented to me as a person who has a very clear route to public safety, and also a compassionate one. Because I've always heard him say, you know, that this is what we need to do, and we don't need to harm anyone doing it. And I was so happy to hear him be, and I'm not sure if this is on your resume here, but I think you were being slot for another chief position and then had to give it up to be, I don't know if that was when you became the commissioner, but I was so happy that you were going to be commissioner. And when I received a call from the Waltz administration about commissioners that were going to be reapproved, it was Paul Schnell that I asked, is he going to stay with us? And I was assured yes, and I was so happy with that. So I join with my senators here that to say that I am so happy that he has decided to stay with us, and I look forward to working with him some more. And I certainly approve his confirmation as commissioner.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can try again now. I move that the appointment of Paul Schnell, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Corrections, be reported to the Senate floor with a recommendation to confirm.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Congratulations, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
There being no further business to come before the committee, I'm going to make a final announcement. We will have our hearing Wednesday, not in this room. It'll be in the Minnesota Senate building, room 1200. The larger room, better set up. No, just for this particular hearing. There being nothing further, we are now adjourned.